Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to Do Go On. My name is Dave Warnicky and I am sitting here with a man that I like to call Matt Stewart. Hello, Matt.
That's me, obviously. Yeah, great.
And Matt, exciting news this week.
Yeah, what's up?
Well, usually I would introduce a third person to the equation now called Jess Perkins.
Yeah, you should do that for sure.
Can't wait till she gets here.
Oh God.
It's going to be great.
I don't know how to tell Matt, but Matt, Jess is not coming this week.
What?
She is away, so I've brought in one of my bestest buds to
fill in. Can't wait till he gets here.
Fill in this week. Could you please welcome our first ever guest of the show? It's Mr. Nick Mason. Hello, Nick.
Hello. Oh, thank you. Unexpected. Thank you very much.
Matt, please clap a bit louder.
Oh, are you an audible clap?
Clap on mic, please. Thank you.
Otherwise, it sounds like one man clapping, which was me.
Great to be here. Just to ease the transition for you guys, I have decided to dress as Jess Perkins.
Yes, you were wearing a very Jess Perkins-style jumper.
I'm wearing her signature yellow jumper. She'll get it back after the recording.
You look really good in it, Nick.
Thank you.
I imagine all future guests will be having to wear Jess's hand-me-downs.
I hope so.
You know, I mean, assuming that we'd ever need another guest.
Well, Jess is on Roadshow now. Well, that's Comedy Festival Roadshow.
We should, just for context, Jess is become a comedy superstar since starting this podcast, I will say that.
Yeah.
Since Matt and I invited her to be the third person on the show.
And correlation does imply causation.
She has overshot both of us, the original members of the show, and become a comedy superstar touring as part of the Melbourne International Comedy Festival Roadshow around Australia. So we've got in you, Meso. You are one of our friends in real life. But also you
the highest compliment one can receive.
You listen to the show.
I do. I'm a big fan. Second point.
And you also do your own podcast.
It's called The Weekly Planet, yeah.
Weekly Planet, which
is a really good podcast.
Exactly. Oh, stop it. Stop saying how good I am, guys.
It's my perfect kind of podcast because it's about a thing I really like but don't understand at all, you know, which is the superheroes in the cinemas.
Oh, that's a perfect...
Is that kind of what it is?
That's a perfect explanation. It's about the superheroes in the cinemas, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So
we'll talk about a big blockbuster. We'll talk about a TV show. You know, just the stuff that makes up life.
And it's all the stuff and I like... And then they explain things that I didn't get were important in those things. It's the best. I'm just like, I've enjoyed Batman versus Superman. And then I get to listen to The Weekly Planet and find out why I shouldn't have enjoyed it.
You're a bad person for enjoying that.
You should retract your own opinions to yourself.
Don't have an opinion. Don't have an opinion until somebody on the internet tells you what that opinion should be. That's always been my rule.
That's a good rule. And I mucked up with that one because it turns out I was the only person in the world who enjoyed that movie.
You're not alone. I know a lot of people who have enjoyed
it. Like, there are things I didn't enjoy, like the... I was going to say the Riddler, but it's not the Riddler. It's the main bad guy who...
The Joker.
Not the Joker.
Yeah, I also thought you'd confuse the Riddler.
Superman bad guy.
Lex Luthor.
Lex Luthor. Uh-huh. Yeah, he was really annoying. But I think...
Not the Riddler. Not...
No. But I think he was annoying just because I think I just don't like that actor that much. Not
Jesse Eisenberg.
His fault. But I mean, he was just sort of Jesse Eisenberg in it.
Yeah, well, that version of the character is based on a real life person, Max Landis, who's a screenwriter. And that's like That's a picture-perfect impression.
I haven't seen...
So he's a really good actor. I just found that character quite annoying.
So I haven't seen the movie, but they've decided to base a supervillain on one of their friends that also writes movies.
Yes. That is what happened there.
Is that an ultimate compliment, or is that very offensive that one of the most famous bad guys of all time, they're like, no, screw his backstory. We're going to make it about you narcissistic bastard.
You're definitely worse than a man who's repeatedly tried to destroy the world.
There's something just nice about him, but you don't have any redeeming qualities.
Not at all.
Oh, God, remember that script you wrote? Jesus.
Good boy.
Right. Well, that's weird. See, they're the kind of things you don't know if you're just watching it.
I wouldn't know. So that's why you are here, Matt. So you are a triple threat. Let's just recap. You are one of our friends.
Threat number one.
IRL.
Number two. In real life, that's right. Threat number two. You know the show that we are about to be on. This one, which you are already on.
I'm on it right now.
And that's a threat, apparently.
That's a threat. Yeah.
Number three, you are an expert in a field that Matt and I have been interested in, but have been too scared to dabble in on this show.
Yes, we've had it in the hat a bit.
And we've repeatedly had people request any sort of superhero-based topics.
Have you explained what this show is yet, Dave? We've explained what Meso's show is.
Should you? And to explain everything back together, threat number four coming from my mouth.
Oh, boy.
This
He's going to bash us.
Actually, I imagine we might have some people that have never heard the show, maybe that have come across from your podcast. So what happens is on this show, usually Matt, Jess, or I take it in turns to research a topic, then report back to the class on the topic. Mm. And we hoped that maybe we could invite you to actually report to Matt and I. So usually for the show to start the report, the person giving the report has a question that they pose to the others. And I imagine this week you're going to have some sort of superhero-based question to get us onto whatever topic you've chosen in that realm.
Yeah, okay. Look, my question was going to be, what company 20 years ago had to file for Chapter 11 bankruptcy? They were a company that were selling their own filing cabinets just to pay the rent.
Oh, Ansett Australia?
You're very close. You're nearly there.
Is it more superhero-based?
I imagine more superhero-based.
But now they're behind a film franchise that has, at this point, I think, a revenue of $18 billion. So things have turned around.
Billion with a B.
Billion with a B, yeah.
Think about how many filing cabinets you could buy with $1 billion. $18 billion.
At least $18 billion. Yeah,
that's right. It's a solid gold. Yeah.
So I imagine there aren't very many options here. You've got DC, maybe. You've got Marvel.
Sony did the Spider-Man movies.
Yeah, that makes it... this is confusing. Hopefully you'll be able to explain this, Meso. But there's Sony, which is that Fantastic Four? No.
That's Fox.
Okay, there's Fox.
So Fox is Fantastic Four. Sony is Spider-Man.
Sony's Spider-Man, yeah.
Marvel Cinematic. Then there's DC Warner Brothers.
The answer, guys, is Marvel.
Marvel.
Is that true they were selling filing cabinets?
Yeah, there's a comic book writer called Brian Michael Bendis, and he's written the most issues of Spider-Man. He's written like 300 issues of Spider-Man, and he started in 1996. And when he came to the Marvel bullpen, sort of their office sort of area, is sort of known as this, it's kind of this wild party situation. Everybody's friends and everybody's having a great time, and he went in expecting that. And he went in and there was just like it was all dark except for like one strip of like benches and desks with a few people working there. This is in 1996. And like a big pile of filing cabinets in the corner and like near the door. And he's like, what's going on there? And they're like, oh, we have to sell those. Any fixture we don't need is going out the door so we can pay the rent this month.
Fuck.
So yeah, because Marvel is one of those giants where like it seems like it's been a success story forever.
Yeah,
like,
right?
When if you've seen a Transformers movie, it seems like those movies have been going forever and it's this billion-dollar juggernaut kind of thing. But like... in the 90s, like that was on its last legs. Like they were producing little action figure Transformers that didn't transform. Like just as this last ditch attempt to kind of
trying to cash in on
trying to cash in on you know whatever
non-transforming Transformers.
What, so you'd have to buy a separate transformed toy, and then if you were playing with it, you have to throw one behind your back, whip it out, and go, look, now it's a police car.
Yeah. You need to employ a little bit of misdirection and then switch him out, yeah.
Well, that was pretty quick, wasn't it?
Yeah, right.
Now it's a tank.
But yeah, so Marvel is one of those, it's an institution now, like, it's had a very rocky road.
Wow, and so that was when this guy, Brian Michael
Bendis
was starting out, and he stayed for a long time.
He did, yeah. Yeah, he's kind of a... he's you know he's plotting a lot of the universe sort of right now. It's his universe in a way. Yeah.
Right.
Now he owns the filing cabinets.
Yeah, he gets as many filing cabinets as he wants. Yeah.
Did they lose anything important, like classic original copies of the things and stuff? Artwork and
I imagine
whatnot?
They just took them out of the filing cabinets and put them on the floor.
Right.
So,
oh shit, all those first editions were inside that filing cabinet. I sold for $18.
That, I mean, that's kind of, you know, oftentimes you'll hear about somebody just, you know, unearthing a filing cabinet at an auction or something, you know, just a used goods auction, and it's got first edition copies of something in it. It's not unheard of.
Right.
Yeah. Right, so what you're telling us is we should be buying filing cabinets.
Yes, exactly. Invest in filing cabinets is
Matt,
my...
Let's do it.
I know what we're doing tomorrow.
Anyway, so Marvel Comics.
Great, so Marvel Comics, it's a great topic.
Yeah, so look, if we want to start talking about Marvel Comics, we should probably start talking about just comics in general. So comics are sort of the redheaded stepchild of just the art world. Like, they've never had...
Is that a positive thing?
Yeah, Matt says with his big red beard looking at us.
Look, they've never had the love they've deserved.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean?
I can relate to that.
Look, they've never had the respect they deserve. And I think initially it's because comic books started... You know, newspapers had comic strips, and comic books started essentially as collections of comic strips that had been sent into newspapers that weren't good enough to be in the newspaper.
Right.
And if you've ever read a comic strip in a newspaper...
They're not that great.
Look, from time to time there's a good one.
But
Robot Man?
The ones that couldn't make it in,
yep.
Compiled.
Compiled, yeah, and just... sort of bound up and put out there for, you know, 5 cents or something like that.
Often, that feels like they're just incomplete thoughts, those things.
Often they are. Often, especially if it's a sequential one, because it's like one panel of, like, what happened yesterday.
Yeah, what happened last week.
And
yes.
One panel of action, and then look what's coming around the corner for next time.
Yes, it's like one panel a day.
Yeah, right?
It's a sweet con.
Mm. Eventually, some quality stuff started getting put into the mix. There was a character called the Yellow Kid in sort of... the late 19th century, and he was sort of like a street urchin.
Matt has reeled back. Is it vaguely racist?
It's not racist, no. He's called the Yellow Kid because he wears like a really oversized yellow nightshirt.
Is that us? Is that us being racist for...
I guess it is.
Well, it was that era, so it could have been. But just
that's
what
you heard, I heard
fears.
Yellow and I heard late 19th century and I thought, oh dear.
Yes, but he was sort of this street urchin and he had adventures.
Please define... Look, you're going to have to stop... a few times throughout the show and define these nerdy comic book terms. What the hell is a street urchin?
You know, a little kid. He's a youth and he lives out on the street. He just hangs out with his strange little friends.
I was imagining some sort of sea anemone.
Oh, sure, right. No, just a little street tough kind of character. Oh,
sorry about that.
And he, like, his this strip was in William Randolph Hearst's newspaper. It was in Joseph Pulitzer's newspaper. And kind of was like, it was like super, super popular. And it was so popular that it sort of gave rise to the term yellow journalism. Like, that's where that term comes from, because people would be like, oh, what newspapers do you read? And they're like, oh, the yellow newspapers, because they were the newspapers that had the Yellow Kid in them. And so that eventually, because, you know, Pulitzer and Hearst were known for like these sensationalist, you know, stories that not necessarily to do with the truth. They were like, oh, it's yellow journalism kind of thing. And that's where that term comes from. But anyway, so eventually all these strips were collated into... like this first, you know, sort of proto comic book of the Yellow Kid, and that kind of sort of kicked it off a little bit.
So that was a big seller. That was
a big seller, and it was like, oh, finally, there's a little bit of quality to this.
I'm surprised it goes so far back.
Right, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So anyway, comics sort of comics as a medium of like original content of not just collated in strips. So that happened sort of 1933-ish. So we're gonna skip a few decades. Basically, in about, I want to say about 1935. We had a company called National Allied Publications. Some of this might be a little dry, but we'll see how we go.
Love it.
And they produced their first comic book of all original material. It was called New Fun Comics. And it had, like, you know, it was an anthology. So it was like, you know, there was some prose story. There was some, you know, funny animal comics. And there was some, like, swashbuckler, daring do kind of musketeer kind of characters. There was, like, an occult detective called Dr. Occult. Who was created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, who later, like a couple of years later, went on to create Action Comics number one, the character of Superman.
Oh.
Maybe you've heard of him.
Yes, I definitely have.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
Second only to the Yellow Kid in my house.
I know, right? I noticed those two posters on the way in.
Yeah, that's right. One is a lot bigger than the other. Yellow Kid. Of course. championing him. So that sounds like a real mishmash, though. It's just like the variety show of comics.
Yeah, it was kind of like throwing stuff at a wall.
Trying to tick every box.
Seeing what stuck. But Superman was this
You like
first...
this? You like this?
Yeah, Superman was the first thing to really change this universe. Because like prior to this, you'd had like almost every comic, like we're talking, you know, swashbucklers and musketeers and stuff like that, but it was almost always like a regular human character. Maybe he's a detective, he's got some, you know, blazing 45 automatics kind of thing. He's just kind of, you know, it's more or less a regular guy. But Superman, he was this character, looked like a circus strongman. He could leap tall buildings in a single bound, you know.
So I did want to ask this. Yes. Superman, obviously big deal. Now you say to most people, superhero, Superman probably comes to mind first.
Uh-huh.
So he was an instant success?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, this was a phenomenon. This is something people had never seen.
And so he was the first ever superhero?
Yes. He was the first of that mold. You'd have characters like The Shadow, you know, who are now we'd call them more mystery men.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's technically like a character who sort of bridges the gap. He's called the Crimson Avenger, and he was like sort of somewhere in the middle. He had like a red suit and a red trench coat, and he kind of sort of cape-like. He was kind of somewhere in the middle, but most people are like, the golden age of comics kicked off with Superman.
You know when you see those images of man evolving from monkey to man? Like, it starts with this crimson dude.
yellow kid, I think.
Yellow kid, growing up a little bit, turning into, what was the shadow man?
The shadow man,
I like to call him my house. We've got nicknames for all the superheroes. You'll probably hear a few of those throughout the show when I misremember people's names. Then it's the Crimson, then it's the Superman.
Yeah. So okay, anyway,
but when do you go from there?
Yeah, well, where you go from there is you go to a guy called Martin Goodman. He was the son of some Lithuanian immigrants.
Now that is a recipe for a superhero.
I know, right? So he was the eldest of 13 children. You're from a big family, Matt.
I am, yeah. Mm. Well, my dad is, yeah.
Yeah.
A family of 13.
And?
Do you think?
Lithuanian is your nation?
Oh, right. My God.
Yeah. Well, it says eldest of 13 recorded children, so who knows?
Yeah, all my uncles and aunties have been recorded.
Oh, that's definitely...
Yes. Yeah. I think it's me.
You're Spider-Man.
Yeah. Is this true? We're about to talk about Spider-Man?
No, that comes way
later. Oh, right, damn.
Sorry,
I'm sorry to get your hopes up there, Matt. So, you're a Lithuanian man.
So he grew up in the Great Depression. He lived in a lot of hobo camps.
I always find it funny that they call it the Great Depression.
Right.
Doesn't sound like a fun time from all accounts I've read.
Mm.
Please do go on.
Oh, sorry. So, he just sort of drifted across the United States. But in 1929, he was hired by a company called Eastern Distributing Corporation to work in like a magazine publishing company, and he sort of learned some of that sort of skill, I guess. And it didn't help him a lot because like 3 years later, that company went bankrupt, and he was sort of out on the street again. But he sort of learned that skill, and he picked up a lot of that skill, and he kind of became sort of an aspiring businessman, and he got into publishing kind of thing. And he saw the success of Superman. He's like, okay, I've got to jump on this. I've got to jump on this superhero phenomenon. And he founded a company called Timely Publications. And basically what would happen in a lot of cases with like comic book companies is they didn't have an in-house team. What they had is they had they hired a comic book packager, which was basically like an off-site team of people who just wrote and drew stuff at home, and you would just call them up and you'd be like, I need some superheroes, I need some characters, I need some funnies, I need some one-panel jokes, stuff like that. Just put something together for me and just chuck them over.
So they're just throwing ideas at them.
Just throwing ideas at them, yeah.
Telephone, man, that'll do.
Yeah, exactly.
Put it together.
Yeah, and so...
See you Monday.
He put together a test comic called Marvel Comics Number 1. This is in 1939.
And so where did he get the word Marvel from? Is this something like he just like thought that sounds like a great idea? Marvel Comics, that'll do.
Yeah. Marvel, marvelous. Yeah. Right? It's all about fantastical.
Uh-huh.
Is that what it... Because that's kind of... Marvel's not a really big word apart from... Like if you hear Marvel now, it just means...
Yeah, but you can marvel at something.
No, totally. You totally can, but no one really uses it like that anymore. But I think it's now just owned by comics. So I wonder if it was just more common back then.
It might have been. It is definitely very snappy. I think it's just something you pulled out of the air.
Was DC around at this stage?
Yes, national...
Superman was DC from the start?
Yes, they were called National Allied. And what happened is a couple of years later, they produced a comic called Detective Comics. Right. And Detective Comics number 27 was the first appearance of Batman. And that kicked right off. People are hugely in favour of that.
Yes.
And then there was some sort of ownership shake-up. And, like, one guy left and one guy was replaced and all that sort of thing. So they put the company back together and they're like, well, let's call it Detective Comics.
Oh, right. They reformed the band without the drummer sort
exactly.
of thing.
Exactly. That's exactly what happened, yeah.
Gotcha. Mm. I'm Batman or Superman? I'm a Batman guy.
I'm also a Batman guy.
What about you, Dave?
I'll definitely pick a Batman over a Superman.
Yeah. That's interesting. Is that common?
A lot of people find Superman really, really boring.
Yeah, I think that's
the key.
My main beef.
Yeah, if you say why is Superman... Who's your least favorite superhero? Most people say Superman. You say why? And it's because he's a one dimensional goody two shoes, and he's boring, and nothing can hurt him except kryptonite.
Now,
yes.
If we do say that, would you come back at us and say that's correct, or do you think that as a bigger fan of comics,
I'm a big fan. I'm actually a big fan of Superman. What happened? The problem with Superman is that like all those things that I've just said, they were also a problem for the writers of Superman. Like it's hard to have him like. Throw some planets around in one issue, and then the next issue he's fighting some bank robbers and he's having trouble fighting the bank robbers. Yeah. You're like, why is like how do you write around that? And that was really difficult. So like in the 80s, DC had this event called Crisis on Infinite Earths, where basically they went, okay, we're going to make some changes to this. We're going to simplify everything. There's too much stuff in our universe. We'll have this event happen and we'll change everything. And what they did is they depowered Superman quite significantly. Like he was still a very powerful character. But he wasn't, like, if you hit him hard enough, it hurt. It didn't have to be, like, a kryptonite bullet or a,
right.
you know, what have you. What happened is that they never really told the people who made the movies. Because they made the Christopher Reeve Superman in 1979, and he was this one who could fly around the world in reverse time and do all these crazy things. And I guess they were like, well, we can't really change it now. So in the movies, he's always been this guy who can do anything, and that's not really very exciting. But the comic book version, like... They went, okay, he doesn't have as many powers. Let's give him more depth as a character.
And that's still true to this day in comic book world?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Oh, right. That's interesting. But just not in the movies still.
Yeah, they've gone more of a way to it, I think, in these last couple of movies.
Right.
Whether people enjoy them as movies or not remains to be seen.
That's right.
I mean, not really. Well, a lot of people hate them. But...
Yeah, only one person who's enjoyed them is sitting in this room
He's sitting in this room, yeah.
Well, I mean, it was very long, and I'd say I enjoyed...
Yeah.
I enjoyed more than half of it.
Mm.
So that's a good time.
Is that a good review? If you saw a movie and you enjoyed 51% of it?
Well, I'd say 65% of it.
That's an even better pass.
That is.
That's a credit.
It's a C-minus maybe?
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
So anyway, Marvel Comics number one had some characters like the Human Torch. Not the Fantastic Four Human Torch, the original Human Torch, who was an android.
Okay.
Different character.
Could he still the Human set fire Torch himself?
Was an android.
The original one was, yeah.
That's
he was
confusing.
Created in a lab. He was, yeah.
Could he still flame on?
Yes, he could, yeah.
Did he say the words flame on?
Yes, from time to time he did.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
So he's an android. He's correct. Not human. Was he a torch? Could he flick on or not? Was he like a dolphin torch?
Yeah, in many ways he was.
He was more of a battery powered.
So a half of his name was true.
Yeah, he was a torch.
Okay.
So he's certainly not human.
He was good in an emergency.
Well, I don't know
but,
what to
like,
believe.
Kept on top of the fridge.
Yeah.
Great.
Also, another character in there was Namor the Submariner, who was sort of an Aquaman-style character. He's still in use today.
Namor
the Submariner.
Was he some sort of android?
No, he's from the Lost City of Atlantis.
Oh.
He's a submariner.
Yeah, correct.
That means he's from below the...
Imagine mariner. like a mighty man wearing like green swim trunks. And he's got little wings on his ankles that enable him to fly.
Kieran Perkins.
Yeah, it's Kieran Perkins with little wings on his...
I was going to say, I just imagined myself...
Was Kieran Perkins based on him?
I think so, yeah.
Makes sense.
He trained every day thinking, you are Namor.
One day I'm just going to leap out of this pool and just fly. So Namor the Submariner was actually the first character, the first superhero who could fly. Because up until this point... Superman was just a leap tall buildings in a single bound guy.
Oh.
He hadn't yet gained the
big
ability
jumper.
To fly. Yeah, he was a big, more of a jumper.
Right.
Yeah.
Was he already from
the planet Krypton?
Krypton?
He was from the planet Krypton. He was...
And he grew up on a farm the whole time?
No, the original incarnation of Superman arrived on Earth as an adult man.
Right.
He still pretended to be mild-mannered reporter Clark Kent. What happened is, some people emailed. People didn't email. They sent a letter like they did back in the day and they said, hey, what was Superman like as a boy? And they're like, well, we should do the adventures of Superboy. And so they created these additional stories of him, and they're like, okay, well, he arrived on Earth as an infant, and he was raised by the Kents, and when he was a kid, he had adventures as Superboy.
Because that added something to it, right? That whole growing up on as a simple farmer?
I think so, yeah. Mm.
That gave him some...
Yeah, it gave him some good old-fashioned family values.
And some
yeah.
farming cred.
Yeah.
That's right. Exactly. He always had a labouring job just in case things went wrong at the journalism factory. Technical term.
Thank you.
Mm. So Marvel, the Marvel Comics number one. So actually, to give you some background, nowadays, if you publish a comic book and it sells maybe 30,000 copies, that is knocked out of the park. That is, if you've bloody hit it for six.
So that's like a platinum album.
That's a good result. So the first issue of Marvel Comics in 1939 sold 80,000 copies. And nice. Then they were like, well, we've sold out. We'll reprint it again. And then they sold 800,000 copies. So that's... Oh, so that's pretty impressive.
Well, so Namor and Human Torch were very popular.
Yeah, absolutely. They very quickly got their own titles. What basically happened is Goodman's like, okay, I'm onto a good thing here. I've made my money back from Funnies Incorporated. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to make this in-house. So what he did is he went to the staff at Funnies Incorporated and he was like, I'm going to grab some people out of this. So he got this writer called Joe Simon, who he wanted as the editor of his comic book company, and he got a guy called Jack Kirby, who's...
Oh, I've heard of him.
See, he's very important in the world of
comic books,
Marvel especially. And he also got... He had his cousin by marriage was a 16-year-old kid looking for work at the time, and he really needed a job, and so he moved across country to work at Timely Publications, and his name was Stanley Lieber.
Oh.
Who was probably better known as Stan Lee.
And he was only...
Oh, I've heard of him.
Yeah.
And he was only 16 when he joined the comic book world.
So he grew up sort of in the upper west side of Manhattan, sort of, you know, middle class. And he's later said, you know, it's the feeling, the most important thing for a man is to have work to do, to be busy, to be needed. Like, that was his philosophy. And he did a few little jobs. He wrote advanced obituaries for the news. So, like, just in case people would die.
In case famous celebs die.
Yeah, okay, exactly. He'd write those in advance. He did publicity for a hospital, I think. He worked in, a theatre project. But, yeah, so his cousin was married to Martin Goodman, and he was, you know, in the comic book world. So he got a gig as, like, their gopher, you know, just around the office doing, you know, bits and pieces. And he sort of almost immediately started writing scripts for this, you know, this new business. So, and he would sign them Stan Lee as opposed to Stanley Lieber. He'd said that his anecdote has always been that he wanted to save his real name for when he would write the great American novel.
Oh, that's
so he
so
was
cool.
Like, look, so Stan Lee, if you don't know anything about Stan Lee, you've probably still seen Stan Lee. Like, if you've seen a Marvel movie, you've seen Stan Lee because he's in almost all of them. He's an old man. He's got like aviator sunglasses and like a caterpillar mustache, and he speaks in a New York accent. And he appears in the Marvel movies at some point. Like, there's always a countdown until he appears in the movies. Like, a friend of mine recently went and saw Deadpool at the, you know, one of the Marvel movies at the cinema. It was during the school holidays, and he, you know, it was filled with, you know, teenage kids or whatever. And he sits down and he looks to his left, and a couple of seats to his left, there's like a 60-year-old woman probably. And like her 85, 90-year-old mum, and he's like, "Oh no, they've stumbled into this by mistake. Like,
oh,
this
no.
is this is, they've, and they, you know, this
is not the best exotic marigold hotel,
right.
too.
And, exactly. And like 10 minutes in, there's been like language and sex and people being decapitated and what have you. And he's like,
suddenly this becomes the new movie, just turning over to watch their
That's
reaction.
Right. And he's like, "Oh, I'm so this is uncomfortable for me. This must be uncomfortable for them. They can't leave, what have you." And then all of a sudden, it goes to a strip club, and like the owner of the strip club, Stan Lee, and the 60-year-old woman goes, "Look, Mom, it's Stan Lee." And they're like, "Yay!" So like he's a character. You can't really talk about Marvel without talking about Stan Lee, for good or ill.
Oh, is there ill?
There is a little bit of ill. We'll get to it in a little bit. Cool. But so he started writing scripts for this. So in 1940, Jack Kirby and Joe Simon, they create a character originally to be called Super American. But instead, Joe Simon was like, "Man, there's too many super characters already. So we'll make this guy Captain America." So in 1940, they released Captain America. This is before America enters the war. So this is like a year before Pearl Harbor was bombed. But, like, the war has started. But the first issue, the cover is him punching Hitler. Like, that's... they've started out strong. And that sold a million copies. So that was...
That was
a strong start. Like, immediately, like, a million copies.
They know how to market in that era,
Anyway, so Stanley became this gopher at this place. He was writing scripts. And he meets Jack Kirby. And so the story goes that, you know, Stanley is this, you know, he's this really cheerful guy. He's really animated. He's, you know, he leaps around the office. He plays an ocarina in the office. That was, I don't know if you know what an ocarina is. It's a little...
It's
a little panpipe kind of situation.
Oh, man.
Fans of The Legend of Zelda will know it from the game The Ocarina of Time. It's a little...
And he plays that.
He played it in the office.
Oh, no wonder he was hit with his 16-year-old woman's
Kirby mom. Kirby was you know, quite a few years older, and he was just like hunched over his desk smoking a cigar.
He was already jaded from the ocarina.
Yeah, exactly. And so
sounds like Martin from The Simpsons, just prancing around
with his lute.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yeah,
and then Jack Kirby's like, "Oh, for fuck's sake!"
I'm so surprised. I'd forgotten about Stan Lee, but he, yeah, in my head, he must have invented Marvel, because, you know, it's weird that he gets that cameo and everything. It's like he is Marvel, but he wasn't necessarily, I guess.
Yeah, well, he wasn't. Well, we'll get to it in a little bit, but I guess he was the guy who stuck around the longest. Right. Like, so he started in, you know, 1939.
And he's still alive.
Yeah, so amazing. And he provided some tweaks to the... You know, he would write scripts and he'd provide some tweaks to stuff. Like, he would, like Captain America, for example, he originally had like a shield that was shaped like a medieval kind of
classic shield.
Yep. And then another company who later became Archie Comics were like, you can't use that. It's too similar to one of our characters, the shield. You can't. So they had to change it.
And there can only be one superhero with a shield.
Exactly. And amazing. So and then they changed it to this round shield, which is the one you see in the movies. And Stan Lee was like, okay, how about in this issue you have him throw the shield? And it's like this kind of boomerang kind of like thrown weapon. And people are like, oh, that'll catch on. And that's like, that's now he's kind of, that's Captain America's signature move.
So he's kind of like a Sidney Sheinberg type character. I don't know if you know familiar with Sidney's work, but Dave...
Oh, yeah.
He was the one who fixed up Back to the Future in some ways.
Oh, yeah, uh-huh. He gave it some tweaks, gave it some juice.
Gave some sweet cheek, tweak. Some of them didn't come off.
No, that's right. He throws out 50 ideas hoping to get two good ones.
Right, yeah.
That's the Sheinberg way.
Absolutely, yeah.
That's the Sheinberg way.
Yeah, like, well, Stan Lee, you know, for decades he's just been a showman. Like, he puts 100% into everything he does.
Even the panpipes.
Even the panpipes, exactly. But, like, so Kirby and Simon, who created, you know, Captain America, they you know, they created it, they sold a million copies of the first issue, and then...
And Stanley's still giving him, like, tweaks as, a, like, a 17-year-old
kid. Yeah, that's right.
How about this?
And so
Who the fuck are you, mate?
Two ran afoul of Goodman, and they're like, you know what, we're out. We're going to leave.
Who, sorry?
Kirby and Simon. The creators of Captain America, they're like, you know what, we need, you know, we want a little more, but you're not giving us anything else, so we're gonna take off. But so basically, at this point, Stan Lee, who was 19, I think 18 or 19, Goodman's just like, okay, you're the editor in chief now. You're the editor in chief of Timely, and so he stuck around.
You're there with the panpipes. You're in charge.
Like, you're Moxie. You're in, and he held that position for basically two decades. Like,
see, that's I like that, but also. You become the top dog at 19. You would expect by the age of 40 that you'll be the president or something, and then of the country.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
And then
exactly.
In 20 years, you're like, still got that 19-year-old job.
And it wasn't necessarily like like 20 years left. That's a full career essentially. You don't think, but Stanley, I think, is 93. He doesn't feel like 93.
No.
But he's been there since the beginning. But like, except for like, there was 3 years he was in the army, so that was, you know, that's a little.
Yeah, right. I can't picture him in the army, but I mean, he's on so many cameos.
Yeah,
he's played every different profession.
He could be a general.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I think he was never really, 100% happy there. I think partly because Goodman was this trend chaser. Like, so after the war, superhero comics were significantly in decline.
A superhero punching Hitler on the front cover's not selling as many.
No, comics. Exactly.
And the boss is like, "What's wrong? This used to be great. People used to love this."
Oh, you mean he's been punched to death?
Oh,
okay. So like,
just punch him with the other hand.
Yeah. Oh. So like, even Superman and Batman fell out of fashion. So for example, like there was a company at the time who did a, like, they did a cops and robbers series. It was called Crime Does Not Pay. And so Goodman was like, oh, well, we should come up. So he was like, okay, we've got to make some knockoffs. And so in response to Crime Does Not Pay, he released Crime Must Lose! Exclamation mark.
Oh my God.
Crime Can't Win. That was another one. Lawbreakers Always Lose. Like, that was kind of...
Crime, it does not pay,
definitely
does it?
Does not pay. Yeah, so, like, and so every time the wind shifted, so, like, in...
It feels like crime does pay if you can rip people off like that and make a lot of money from it.
Yeah, so, like, romance was big in, like, the late 40s, like, 1948, like, romance and, like, teen adventures.
He's doing
like...
Marvel romance.
Yeah, Marvel, things. Marvel, again, when you think of Marvel, you're like, superheroes, yeah. But it, like, it went through all kinds of...
Really?
Yeah, so, like...
Was there ever a weird porno phase?
No, although I think at one point...
Comic book porn.
I think they had some sister companies that were into more like adult. We'll get to more adult stuff, I think, in a couple of minutes. But like,
oh.
So the 1940s, there was all these romance. And because like, also there was a company called Archie Comics. And it was like, you know, America's, you know, most lovable teen. It's Archie Andrews kind of thing. And he was in a love triangle with Betty and Veronica and all these... You know, these fun little high school adventures.
The Goodman was like, we need a character called Farchie.
Well, that's the thing. Like, he created a character... Well, a character was created called Patsy Walker. He was like, okay, Archie Andrews, like, he has this red hair, and it's got, like, specific cross-hatching in the hair. You should have her have that same cross-hatching in the hair. Like, he was a micromanager to that point, where it's just like, okay... The secret must be in the hair to his success. Give her the same hair, kind of thing. Fun fact for
so
you.
So there's a maniac.
Yeah, he's a maniac. Yeah. I studied this comic pretty closely, and
yeah.
It's definitely the hair that's setting this
fun fact, Patsy Walker from 1948, still around as a character. She eventually became the superhero Hellcat, and she is in, if you watch the Daredevil, the Jessica Jones series on Netflix, she is in that played by Rachel Taylor. She's Trish Walker.
Right, she's became Australian.
Yeah, yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. Oh,
what an evolution. And what about the cross-hatching? Is it there?
Yes,
no, she's blonde. There's no cross-hatching of any kind.
Oh, Goodman would be rolling in his grave. I assume he's dead. I assume he's dead.
He's dead, yeah.
I hope he's dead.
Yeah, so like, so Stanley was...
Gotta turn on some people. with Jess not here, someone's gotta hate people out of nowhere.
And turn on the dead.
Yeah.
That's her trademark.
Yeah.
Hating on the dead. Punching people that can't fight back. Or accountants.
Like Hitler.
Like
she,
Hitler.
She punches him all the
Come
time.
Come that, Hitler!
So yeah, so romance in the 40s. Horror comics were big in the 50s.
Oh, is this true?
Yes.
That the Addams Family started as a comic book? No,
I do not have the answer.
Your face says I said something stupid.
No, my face says I don't know. My face says I do not have the information available, so...
Look, no, I embarrassed myself in front of a
guy. You
know what?
No, they were. You're right. They were a newspaper character strip, I think. Yeah. We could look that up later, or somebody could email in and correct us, but I'm not going to read that. Okay. Horror, in the 50s, the Western came back, so they did Western comics for quite a while. The Rawhide Kid was a very popular Western character for Marvel. He came back... he came back very quite recently with a sort of a homoerotic subtext.
Okay,
it was
good.
good fun series. And then
through Marvel or fan fiction?
Through Marvel, a few years ago had a imprint called Max, which was like this ain't your daddy's Marvel comics. It was kind of like
was that generally the tagline? Because that'd be amazing.
Not really. No,
this ain't
it was
your
like
daddy.
It was like it didn't like it was kind of like, you know, all the safeties are off and they're swearing, and there's sex, and there's, you know, etc.
But, you know, you said it was a fan fiction. Isn't that kind of what it's become anyway? Like, because it's... All these characters have been around for so long.
Uh-huh.
And it's, like, kids who grew up with it, fans...
Yeah.
Ended up just doing official fan fiction, a lot of
that
it, right?
That is in a lot of cases. Like, people who grew up as huge fans of these comic book characters, eventually, yeah, they got the writing skills, they got the artistic skills, and they're like, I want to work for Marvel or DC. A criticism that is often leveled at... some writers especially and, you know, and Marvel and DC at times is that they always want to keep this status quo, like certain characters never evolve.
Right.
Because a person's like, well, I grew up in the 80s and, you know, Green Lantern was like this. And so now, and they go to work for DC and the character moved on and they're like, well, I'm going to bring him back to how he was in the 80s kind of thing. And so, you know, there's that kind of,
it's just nostalgia.
Yeah, it's nostalgia in a way. I would prefer, you know, characters that
keep evolving,
but that's not going to happen.
Were these characters, the original characters, evolving? Like, is Captain America in the 50s becoming Western or doing the erotic stuff? Or are they staying true to superhero kind of stuff that we'd imagine.
That's a very interesting question. Captain America didn't survive into the 50s. His last two issues of his comic were called Captain America's Weird Tales, and Captain America was not in them. They were just
That's how weird it was.
Yeah, they were just horror suspense comics. He was on the cover of issue 74, but he was not in the issue, and he was not at all on the cover of 75.
Did that piss people off?
I think, you know, nowadays I'm sure it would have. But
he was so unpopular that if he was popular enough, he would have been in them. I'm imagining.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and also back in the day, comics were kind of disposable. Like now, when you think, you know, Action Comics number one featuring Superman is worth $1 million. That's because when it came out, everybody read it and just immediately threw it away or wrapped the fish and chips up with it. And so, you know, in order for something to be collectible.
Yeah,
there can't be many.
Yeah, there can't be. They have to throw them away.
People have to devalue them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's called the trough of no value. I learned this recently. That not only does something have to have no value, it has to have so little value that in like storing it in your house, that is costing you money.
Right. Because
it's taking up the space of collection of fridge magnets or whatever. So you have to. It has to reach negative value.
Negative value.
Yeah, yeah.
And then eventually there's so little of it and time passes that it becomes super valuable.
Right, exactly, yeah.
But it also has to be something that people then care about again. Like, there'd be a lot of things like that that no one even thinks about now.
Right, exactly.
Fuck. Yeah. I fucking love this world.
But that's the thing, like, but people have become
comic,
so...
I'm a comic book kid that just never had a comic book,
what
I reckon.
What did you collect, though?
Footy records.
Oh yeah,
still got a couple of boxes of them.
The trough of no value was deep in that respect.
Yeah. So basically, the comics industry was in kind of, you know, through the '50s, the comic industry was kind of in a decline.
And it's only 20 years old, less than.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was you know, up and down.
Yeah, right.
What happened in the '50s? There was a guy called Frederick Wortham. He was a psychiatrist, and he wrote a book called Seduction of the Innocent. And he sort of claimed that there was a rise in juvenile delinquency and homosexuality and, you know, other bad things of the time. And he was like, the reason for this is popular media for kids. And so he was like, and then, so...
Yeah, that Weird Tales edition of Captain America. Right, so wow, really set the kids
chilling.
On.
So there were quite a few, there were a lot of examples in his book. It was kind of like the BuzzFeed list of its time. Like, check this out. Here's a little bit of commentary. Check this out. Here's a little bit of commentary on it. And there's a publisher called Bill Gaines, and he created Mad Magazine, which are, you know, still around today. But he also created he published a lot of like comics like Tales from the Crypt and these like horror comics and crime comics. And they were very lurid, and there was a lot of murder, and there was a lot of torture, and there was a lot of, you know, sexual attacks and all this sort of stuff. And like, you know, you could definitely argue, you know, that's not for kids. You shouldn't be just putting this on a newsstand for kids to grab and take away. But at the same time, a lot of his examples were like, here's a close up of a character's armpit and it looks like a vagina. It's obviously, you know, this subliminal message to children whatever. And he was like, you know...
Really or, searching.
Yeah, or like, this is, you know, here's Robin from Batman and Robin, and he's standing, you know, arms akimbo and his legs are spread apart and he's thrusting his crotch at the reader, you know, kind of thing. But, you know...
Except to say, take me.
Yeah, exactly.
Take me, reader.
Mm. So, basically, it's tough to... I mean, that certainly would have contributed to the decline of this book, this kind of this moral panic of...
Really?
You have to, you know, your kids, you're ruining your kids' lives, they're becoming criminals because of,
been a thing forever, though.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, definitely.
Every generation, it's video games now, is what they say.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it's just because, and I, you know, not to get political on this, but it's you know, it, for parents, I guess you go, okay, I want the idea that there's an off switch. Yeah. You know, you get rid of this, and then everything's going to be fine again.
Yeah,
but it's not going to be fine.
No.
But anyway, basically, what?
Because of society.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. But, we need to turn society off. Do you reckon one day podcasts will become that?
No.
Podcasts are ruining children's minds.
They're staying in their rooms, and the people who are making them are staying in their rooms.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll just be a society where no one interacts except via podcasts anymore. Yeah. So anyway, this resulted in something called the Comics Code Authority, which was this super limiting kind of this set of rules that you could not break.
No armpits that look like vaginas.
No armpits that look like anything.
I was looking at comics.
I'm not interested anymore.
Yeah, right? No. But it was this kind of like, it was very limiting, you know, so it was like no torture, no, you know, horrible mutilation or anything, which was fine. But then it was stuff like you could never end an issue with, like the bad guys ending up on top. So you could never have like an issue that ended on a cliffhanger, because it was always, because then the bad guys were the winners kind of thing. You could never have like a character in a position of authority who turned out to be bad. So you can never have a cop on the take. You can never have a corrupt politician.
Well, that would be, you know, so unbelievable that kids... Yes.
They wouldn't understand. I know. Exactly. Corrupt politician.
Can you even imagine a corrupt police officer, Matt? No, it's impossible.
I'm trying. I'm trying real hard.
And then you're in your bloody early 30s and you can't do it. Imagine a 15-year-old
kid. Little kid. You're just a 16-year-old kid being the editor-in-chief of Marvel Comics. You can't understand it. But it sort of went to the bizarre. It was like, okay, there's to be no mention of werewolves and ghouls and zombies and vampires.
Normal wolves are fine, but werewolves?
Werewolves, they're right out.
I draw the line.
Yeah, so... Just in case kids were like, oh, I'd like to be a ghoul.
I'd like to be a werewolf.
I'll kill myself and become a... Yeah.
I'd like to be a ghoul.
Yeah, right?
I really like the idea of being a ghoul.
Yeah. I mean, eventually...
When I grow up, I'd like to be a ghoul.
Eventually, these rules were sort of rescinded. Or modified a little bit.
I honestly think we should bring them back.
Yeah, no, right?
That would sort out Captain... Captain Batman versus Captain Superman.
Right, yeah.
If I had my way.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So, later Marvel Comics created, like, Blade the Vampire Hunter. And Wesley Snipes,
yes,
exactly.
They created Wesley Snipes.
They created his career, certainly. And then they crushed it.
He went to jail.
But, like, at... Yeah, he did, for tax evasion.
Yeah, for like 5 years.
Yeah, right.
For tax evasion.
Yeah.
Did he do something else bad? Most celebs that get done for
passenger
tax evasion.
Passenger 57.
Mm.
5 years for Passenger 57.
Yeah.
Always bet on black. Correct. I only say that because that's a thing I know he did. Mm. But it was a good movie.
Yeah, definitely.
He took him down.
Demolition Man, also great.
Yeah. Mm. He did a lot of good stuff.
I was going to say, Yeah, so they eventually rescinded it, but at the time, like, these were so stringent. So the guy who created Blade, it's a guy called Marv Wolfman, many years prior, like, during this comic book, like, during this Comic Code Authority shenanigans, like, one time he submitted, like, a comic book to this authority, and they sent it back, and they're like, this is unusable, you can't. It was like some sort of Tales of Suspense horror kind of thing. And they're like, and he's like, why can't you use it? And they're like, title page, look at that. And...
Armpit vagina.
Yeah, no. Well, see, that's the thing. Like, he had wanted a credit, like, on the, you know, written by, you know, art by, etc., etc. But his name's Marv Wolfman, and his last name's spelt Wolfman. And so they're like, you can't say Wolfman in a comic book. And they're like, oh, so it was that stringent.
And is that his real name?
Yeah, it's Marv Wolfman. Yeah.
That is. So, that's one of the best things I've ever heard.
Yeah, right?
No, that's my real name. No, it isn't.
No, it's not. You're not allowed to use it. So, yeah, so this...
Your name makes me think...
You're dangerous to the kids.
So in the 50s, comic books got... They got less violent, but they certainly got weirder, because I guess, you know, they're like, we can't use the standard stuff. We're going to have to think out of the box. And a lot of stuff was kind of... Yeah, it was, you know, good. You can find some good comic books from the 50s, you know?
But there's just no real violence in...
Yeah, yeah. It's...
And superheroes were out.
Yeah, they sort of towards the late 50s, DC sort of came back on the scene with, they started a series called Showcase, and they brought back a new version of The Flash, they brought a new version of Green Lantern, and that sort of, this was like the mid to late 1950s, and it sort of kicked off again. And
where do you sit on the Green Lantern? See, I saw a cartoon with him during the week.
Uh-huh.
And he just sort of, like, you had a ring on.
Uh-huh.
And then he just, like, he wanted to get the bad guy. So his ring turned into a steam train.
Correct.
And the steam train ran over the bad guy.
Yep.
And then and Batman was there, and Batman was falling, so he got this, made his ring go into a green box.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no, a mitt.
Oh.
And then that turned into an elevator, and the elevator came up in the air, just through the air, and went ding at the top of the building.
Yeah.
It was, you know...
A little much, you're
saying. Yeah, so explain that.
I didn't enjoy him. What do you think about him?
I have no objection to a character who can do anything, like even a you know, a Superman from back in the day who could throw a planet about, as long as they're paired up with a villain who can counteract them, who's got right. you know. But I like Green Lantern. I think he's an interesting character. Yeah,
it's just.
I mean, there's been no.
I mean, it was a cartoon. I was about to say very cartoony.
little bit unrealistic.
Yeah.
bit
far fetched. Thank
you. Yeah. So basically, it was you know, 19 maybe you know the late 50s, early 60s, and so Martin Goodman, who owned Timely Comics, which, you know, he'd since renamed Marvel Comics, he's like, all right, I'm this trend follower. I'm this guy. Let's give superheroes a try again. And so he got...
I thought he was going to make the Super Beatles or something, because it's the 60s.
Oh, yes.
Getting on the bandwagon.
I bet that happened.
So what did he decide to do instead of Beatles?
Oh, instead what he did is he went, okay, Stan Lee, Jack Kirby... You got to put something together for us, and this is where Stan Lee and Jack Kirby have sort of lauded as this incredible team, and they created amazing stuff. But every time either of them did an interview about, you know, them creating these amazing characters, their explanations of what happened are always completely different. So like Jack Kirby had always said, so they're like, okay, you're going to come with this amazing new idea, and Jack Kirby came in to. Jack Kirby, who'd left Marvel many years ago, but he was sort of working as a freelance basis. He'd be like, he's like, I kind of forgive you guys. I'll come back for a little bit and I'll just see what I can come up with. So he comes in like the early 60s, and they're like, again, they're moving out furniture. They're like taking desks out. They're like, this is over.
Wow,
and
they really invest a lot in their furniture, don't they?
Just solid gold desks, solid gold filing cabinets.
Quality antiques.
Yeah, right?
Not emotionally, though, because at the drop of the hat, they're selling it all.
Right.
Get it out.
Yeah. So he says, he comes in. And he sees Stan Lee, he's sitting on a chair, he's crying, he doesn't know what to do. He's he's this kid, and he's been given all these jobs to do, and he can't save this company on his own, kind of thing. And he goes up to Stan Lee and he says, okay, go to Martin, tell him, stop moving the furniture out, I'll do something, I'll see that the books make money. Like, I'll get this company back in the black single-handedly, kind of thing, right? And then he single-handedly creates the characters and the plot of the first issue of the Fantastic Four. Like this.
So he made all four of the characters.
According to him. But so Stan Lee has a completely different version of the story.
Oh.
Basically, he says that Martin Goodman told him that he noticed that one of DC's comics had been selling really well, the Justice League of America, and it's a team of superheroes. And he's like, okay, if the Justice League is selling, why don't we put out a team of superheroes?
That sounds like Martin Goodman to me.
Right, exactly, totally right, yeah. And so Stan Lee's like, well, I don't want to just create some swill, so I'll create a super team such as Comic Com has never known. Like that he's the showman, right? And he's like, okay, their characters, they're fallible, they're feisty, they're colorful, they've got, you know, they're colorful, but they still have feet of clay. Like they're these realistic kind of characters, right? And so according to him, he created the Fantastic Four out of nothing.
Who do you believe?
look. We'll Stanley's always been the showman. He's been the P.T. Barnum kind of these characters always. And the thing that Marvel pioneered is this thing they call the Marvel Method of creating stories. So and this sort of came about because, again, Stan Lee was this one guy. He was this editor-in-chief at this company, and he's churning out these dozens of stories. And according to him, like, somebody would come up to him and go, okay, I've got to write the new issue of this. What's the plot going to be? You know, I need the script. And Stan Lee would just go, okay, it's going to be this. It's going to be this character, this villain, and he's going to be robbing a bank, and the good guys are going to come in, and this is going to happen, and then they're going to stop him and put him in jail. Okay, go draw it.
Right? So that's the formula.
That's the formula, basically. So, you know, then the artist would just go away, and he would draw whatever he wanted. and then he'd give it back to Stanley, and Stanley would draw in some, write in some dialogue, and then that was the finished issue. And like, this was very much a double-edged sword, because some artists were like, okay, this is amazing. I don't have to look at a script and go, okay, page one, panel one, you see this guy, and then page one, panel two, you see, and he's looking at out a window, and page one, panel three, blah, blah. He can just go, okay, I want to draw an amazing battle scene. I can do it in 10 panels. I can do it in 20 panels. I can do it in just one giant panel. I can do, you know, whatever I want. But at the same time, in a way, the artist is also writing the story. And Stan Lee would always insist when he create, you know, when he put out a series, that it would say written by Stan Lee and drawn by Steve Ditko or what have you. But in a lot of cases, it should have said written by Stan Lee and Steve Ditko,
yeah.
Illustrated by Steve Ditko. And so...
It sounds a bit like a band making a film clip and then, like, a director and then going, hey, here's the music video, and then you're like, all right, I'll bust out some chords to it.
Yeah. Right.
Trying to match to it.
Mm.
And can I just ask quickly before you do go on about Jack Kirby and Stan Lee? Uh-huh. Are either of them drawing the original... They claim to create these characters.
Uh-huh.
Are they fantastic artists themselves?
Jack Kirby's an amazing artist. He actually... Yeah, he was...
This is what the thing looks like. Or
yeah, absolutely. He came up with the designs for all these characters.
Yeah, cool.
There was a editor of the X-Men called Louise Simonson in the 80s, and she described him as the Picasso of comic books, of American comic books. Like, he's got this... It's a very specific style. It's very stylized. Like, it's not photorealistic by any stretch of the imagination, but it's got this amazing sort of dynamism, and it's got this, you know, this sense of movement, and it's... It's real good, guys.
Oh, and what about does Stan Lee draw? Or
no, you? No. I mean, you people, they will unearth a sketch from time to time, but he's not an artist. No, he's an ideas man.
Ideas, I don't know. Man. I feel like if you want to be Kirby, sounds like the full package.
Right.
To me,
but yeah. So like, but I mean, never that. So that was sort of the we're talking about Fantastic Four, but that was sort of the. The way it went every time, like, there'd be, you know, Stan Lee would have this charming account of how he, you know, he come with these amazing colourful characters and we save the day kind of thing, and Kirby's like, they wanted a character to do this, so I made this kind of thing, right? And it turned out in, I think maybe 2009, Jack Kirby's estate, his family said, look, he co-created all these characters. It's always said created by Stan Lee or what have you, but look, we would like some of the money, you know, you've made $1 billion off this kind of stuff. We would, you know, and there was a settlement out of court, so it's under terms that are considered quite generous, but we don't know what they are. So,
couple of filing cabinets.
We believe now that he's dead.
Yep.
And he can't get anything that he deserved.
Right.
We want it. I don't know about that.
Yeah.
So I feel like Stan Lee deserves it more than you, who had nothing to do with it.
Right. Uh-huh. You're right.
At least Stan Lee was in the building.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, so the Fantastic Four hit the stands, and it blew people away again. It was like Superman. It's something they'd never seen before, because like
Stanley was right.
Yeah. So to you know, when prior to this, when you thought of comic books, a lot of comic book characters were like, they were a millionaire playboy and they just decided on a lark to become a superhero kind of thing.
Right.
And they talked like people didn't talk, and they acted like people didn't act, and that kind of thing. But sort of these were kind of characters who. They talked like real people, and they quabbled. They quarreled amongst themselves. You know, one month they'd be saving the Earth from an alien invasion, and then the next month they'd nearly be evicted from their house because they couldn't pay the rent. It was that kind of, you know, these amazing fantastical stories, but it was also kind of these relatable characters.
Right. It's funny because you know, I think because I've never read the comics and stuff.
Uh-huh.
The way I understand all these characters is based on like. How the movies have been perceived. So to me, Fantastic Four are like a super lame thing.
The Fantastic Four and film have always been this bitter disappointment to me because it's such an amazing world and it's such an iconic part of the Marvel Universe. Again, they kicked off this sort of the incredible universe, and every movie that has been produced has kind of been they've either been just okay or they've been atrocious.
Right.
Like the last one. Directed by a guy called Josh Trank, and which was messed with by the studios very significantly, is just a train wreck. And there were a couple in the 2000s which were fine. They were kind of dumb, but they were kind of fun. And there was one in 1994 directed by Roger Corman, who famous B movie director, that was never released because it's
that bad.
I think I've seen supposedly. A clip of it
yeah.
on YouTube or something uh-huh. maybe, and it looked.
Look, a lot of people have said
I thought there was a thing about whoever the studio is needs to release it a certain amount of times to keep the license or something?
Yeah, that we'll probably get to that in a sec. But yeah, that Marvel have a history of, up until very recently, giving away their characters for very unfavorable terms to them. Right. Like, again, it's this filing cabinet thing. It's to make a quick buck.
Yeah.
They're like, okay, you can have the character, you can have it forever. Just give us a little bit of money so we can stay afloat. And,
oh, God.
Anyway, so yeah, so the Fantastic Four really kicked things off. It really started like this movement happening. I think Stan Lee said at the time, before they did Fantastic Four, they might have gotten, you know, an issue got released and they might have gotten a letter that said, you know, I bought one of your comics and the staple came out, I want my dime back kind of thing. And they'd take the letter and they'd put it up on the wall and go, fan mail. Kind of thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, after this actual fan mail and people going, look, I really relate to this, you know, it's great.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And so
I can't wait for our hate mail to turn into fan mail. All right. That'll be a great day.
Anyway, so they kicked it off and it was just, you know, then after that it was, you know, Lee and Kirby and Steve Ditko who created a whole bunch of just these amazing characters. So they, you know, Hulk, Thor, the Avengers, Ant-Man, Spider-Man, that was Stan Lee and Steve Ditko. And that, again, this was kind of a revolutionary character because, again, he's not a millionaire, he's not a, you know, this idle playboy who just wants to, you know, have a bit of fun. He's a teenager, which, up until this point, you wouldn't find a superhero who was a teenager. They were always the sidekick. But it was like, okay, here's hey, teenagers, this is a character like you.
Who's the teenager?
Peter Parker, Spider-Man.
Spider-Man's a teenager.
Yeah, yeah.
Spider-Man,
exactly. Oh, interesting. Yeah. So he
spider adolescent.
Yeah, he was this teen, and he wasn't again like a DC hero, kind of infallible character. He's kind of a jerk. He in his initial appearance, he shows off his powers on TV, and he just blows off his admirers like, who cares? You kind of thing. He lets a criminal just run past him because he's like, not my job to stop that guy, kind of thing. And that criminal later goes on to kill his uncle, and then he realizes, you know, with great power comes great responsibility. That kind of classic line.
Oh, that's from Spider-Man.
That's from Spider-Man. I think it's from something else originally, maybe some sort of philosopher, but most 99% of the population, yeah, including myself.
Yeah, Peter Parker.
I fully
yeah.
bought that it was just, oh, that's a Spider-Man.
No, but it is, that's the lesson he learned. And I think, you know, people really related to that, I think, because he, even though he was this guy who climbed the walls and, you know, lift a truck or whatever, he had problems and he just couldn't punch them away. And that's real people. You can't just punch your problems away.
Right.
Yeah, and I've learned that the hard way.
Mm.
I haven't seen any Spider-Man, so I don't know much about him. I just thought he was like, yeah, I thought he was just the...
Web-slinger.
Web-slinging.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know he could lift cars.
Oh, he's super strong.
Yeah, right.
So, and again, Spider-Man, the creation of Spider-Man is basically the most disputed story.
Oh, no. Stan Lee taking
Stan
the role.
Stan Lee's like, okay, he saw a spider and he thought, oh, the amazing powers that the a man could have if he was given the gift of the spider. Or he's like, oh, I thought, I saw there was a pulp hero called, like, the Shadow called the Spider, and I remembered him. And then I'm like, what would that look like in the modern era? What kind of character would that be, kind of thing? But then Steve Ditko has said in the past, Stan Lee just came up with a name and every other aspect was him.
Right.
So,
how about some sort of Spider-Man?
Yeah. Right, exactly.
And then Ditko's like, all right, I'll make another one.
And the additional wrinkle is that Jack Kirby then said, oh, no, actually, I came up with everything and I gave it to those two.
Right.
So it was me.
It's incredible, but I believe that, because memory is so fallible, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So it's very possible that they all fully believe their memories.
That's true. Well, they say, you know, the more you... If you keep telling a lie, eventually you start believing that it's true. That maybe eventually they were like... Maybe they're like, I have to tell people I created it. And eventually they're like, no, I did.
Yeah, I did. I'm pretty sure I did. Mm. Yeah, I did. Definitely did.
And do they start claiming it once they start making lots of money? Is that often the way? Or the way it worked back then is that you create the character... And you just get paid a wage, so you don't even get...
Yeah, but back in the day, up until very recently, every kind of comic book creator, every publisher hired people work for hire. So if you created Spider-Man...
Whilst working for them.
They own Spider-Man. You got paid your day rate, you know, 50
awesome.
Bucks a day.
Yeah, that's $50 for the day. But we make $5 million next year, you don't get a cut.
Well, exactly, yeah.
Shit.
Yeah. And again, there were so many of these. You know, they created this amazing universe, and eventually Kirby quit again. And he went to work for DC. And he immediately created a character called Funky Flashman, who was a very, very thinly veiled version of Stan Lee, who was just this flashy businessman who never created anything and just rode on the coattails of other people. And then he would trick the superhero. Like, he wasn't a superpowered villain, but he would trick the heroes into, you know, making terrible mistakes kind of thing. And so,
what's his name? Super.
That's great. Funky Flashman.
Yeah.
How'd you forget that? That's the only thing I've written down.
No, I thought that he should be called Super Funky Flashman in my mind. And all the readers are like, God, this sucks. But he's thinking, fuck you, Stan Lee.
That's right. But yeah, and so through the 60s and the 70s, I guess Marvel's greatest trick was this. Well, the greatest innovation was probably the shared universe. On the one hand, it was great to have this amazing shared universe and all the characters could interact and they all lived in New York and they'd all have, you know, they'd clash and they'd be friends and et cetera, et cetera. But also at the same time, business-wise, it was amazing because if you wanted to know what had happened to this character before he encountered the other character, you'd have to read their book.
Right.
And then maybe they'd team up. And if you loved Spider-Man and he was meeting the Fantastic Four, you'd have to read that issue of Fantastic Four that he was in, otherwise you wouldn't understand what happened in the next issue of Spider-Man.
Right, yeah, I think that's the thing that's got me into it. I love, like, I've only really got into any of this sort of stuff in the, like, leading up to the Avengers movies. You know, that whole series of Captain America's and the Iron Man ones. I think it was one of the Iron Man ones that was the first thing that got me into the whole comic book superhero thing. And that's what I think that's why I love it the most. I don't think I've loved any of the movies really individually. Okay, I just love how they all come together and...
Yeah.
So they all, in Marvel, they all live in New York City, which is a great idea for them, I guess.
Uh-huh.
Whereas you've got in DC,
you've
got someone in Gotham, the Batman.
Correct.
Over in Metropolis, you've got Superman, and then you've probably got other ones as well.
You do.
Don the Mariner.
Interesting fact for you, the DC Universe Earth is slightly larger than the regular Earth.
So 5% larger.
So the Marvel Universe Earth is the same size as our Earth. Right. But DC Universe Earth is slightly larger because it contains all the regular cities plus additional fake cities.
Right.
So it contains Gotham and Metropolis and Opal City and City.
Are they in America?
Oh, no, they're all in America, yes.
So if you're a citizen of Gotham, you are an American citizen?
Yes.
Oh, right. I just never thought about it.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I just assumed.
Yeah, because they've got American accents and stuff.
Mm. Yeah. Cool, but back to Marvel.
So superheroes are back.
Yeah, it feels like it's good time, bad time.
Yeah, it goes back and forth.
Cowboys and horror is out.
it's right out and again.
Potentially illegal.
Let me check my timeline.
Oh, timelines are very important in universes.
Let me see. In 1986, the company that owned Marvel was liquidated. It was sold to New World Pictures. Again, that's Roger Corman's company. So the famed B-movie director. I think that's how the whole Fantastic Four situation came about.
So he owned Marvel for a while?
He did, yeah. Or his company did it.
And he still only did B-movies.
Yeah, right. Weird, huh?
Well, wow. But superhero movies weren't even big in the 80s.
Yeah, there were a few attempts back in the day, but they never really amounted to anything.
Was Batman the first big one?
It was. Yeah, I think it was. I mean, there was a few attempts.
Superman had a... That's pretty true.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people look at those fondly. I don't care for them so much, but...
Yeah, I find it boring. I haven't even been able to watch it.
Yeah, in 1989, the company was bought by Ronald Perelman, who he was an executive at Revlon, the makeup company. But his company bought Marvel, and he bought it
for fun?
Well, he bought it. I think he saw there was a big boom in the late 80s, early 90s in comic books. People our age will probably remember there was like a big speculator boom because there were these hot new creators of comic books. There were these new guys, the names like Todd McFarlane and Jim Lee, these guys who were kind of like, these guys are the new Lee and Kirby. These are the guys...
Is Jim Lee related to Stan Lee?
Completely unrelated.
Okay.
So basically, there was this era, late 80s, early 90s, where there were these new guys, and they were amazing artists for their time. Or they had like this very late 80s, early 90s art style that was, you know, very dynamic and was, you know, great for the time. And again, this was a point where, again, they were selling a million copies of everything.
Wow.
There was a new issue of Spider-Man. This guy, Todd McFarlane... He was the artist on Amazing Spider-Man, it was selling so well they gave him just a new Spider-Man book. Was just called Spider-Man, like it was the definitive one, and it sold 1.3 million copies or something like that. It was like this huge seller.
And now 30,000 is huge.
Yeah, Yeah, we're approaching a crash. See if you see it coming. And so basically there were these amazing creators and people were like, oh, okay, so these guys are going to create the Action Comics number one of the future. So we got to get in here. We've got to get all their number ones and we'll hold on to these and we'll be millionaires.
Oh, so people started collecting them.
People collect.
Doesn't work like that.
Yeah, people collected. They would collect one to they'd collect one to read and one to save. Like one they'd read and one they'd put in like a plastic bag with a board in it, and it would, you know, they put in a hermetically sealed vault and they'd be like, that's. But then everybody failed to realize that if you're everyone's printing a million copy of it, then this timeline of when it's going to be worth something is going to go out to 100 years.
Yeah, beyond your lifetime.
Your lifetime, exactly. And then these creators, they were huge. And so this guy, he spent $82 million on Marvel. So he bought Marvel for his company.
The Revlon man?
The Revlon man.
Man, he must be very rich.
He's,
if he held on to it.
He's a very rich man. He's worth like $12 billion now, this guy. And he then took the idea of Marvel, and he was like, okay, we're going to buy a trading card company, and we're going to buy a toy company, and we're going to buy like a sticker company. We're going to buy, you know, we're going to buy these video game properties. We're going to buy all this sort of stuff. And he spent like $700 million on this stuff for Marvel.
Yeah.
And then the stock prices went up for Marvel, and he got out fairly quickly. I think he made $800 million on Marvel. And then people left to pick up the pieces because very quickly afterwards, people were like, again, people realized, oh, if we've got a million copies of this, you don't really.
Got to wait for 999,000.
He sounds kind of like an evil genius.
Evil genius in a way, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, sounds like exactly. a funky Flash man.
A real funky Flash man.
Real Joker.
Yeah. And so,
another bad guy from the comic worlds.
His trick was he basically went to his investors and he went, okay, so there are all these collectors out there and they're willing to pay more money and they're going to buy more product because they're going to buy one to keep and one to read and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, we'll release an issue and it's sealed up and it's got a trading card in it and there's six different trading cards. And so people would have to buy all six.
But they have to buy 12.
They have to buy at least six, right? Otherwise, there's no guarantees, right? And so he's like, okay, we'll do that. And then, so the investors, you know, people invest in heavily because they're like, oh yeah, this guy knows what he's talking about. This guy knows what's up. And he kept promising, okay, they'll buy more, they'll buy more, they'll pay more, they'll buy more kind of thing. And eventually,
ruined it.
Yeah, they eventually ruined it. People were like,
did people catch on? They were I want to buy six of the same comic.
Yeah, burn out. Like, you know, there'd be an issue of Spider-Man and it had six different covers on it, and you had to, you know, if you wanted to collect. And people were just like, well, I just want the story, and I don't care about all these hologram covers and these metal foil covers and what have you. And eventually, people just stopped buying. And so, Marvel's in this situation where they were just producing a million copies of everything and getting hundreds of thousands of copies back because people weren't buying them. And they'd built this distribution network to put everything out there, and they owned this toy biz, this toy company that were producing action figures that weren't selling or what have you. And then it all just sort of came tumbling. Marvel kind of took the comic book industry with it in a way, like, because they had this distribution network that kind of collapsed. And right. And so they ended up with a lot of debt, and so in 1996 they filed for bankruptcy. So we're back at the start, basically.
So that's selling filing cabinet.
Yeah. Filing cabinet.
So yeah.
What a loose unit.
Bloody loose unit. Interestingly, the bankruptcy voided Stan Lee's contract with Marvel, and so he went back to negotiate with Marvel, and he actually said, okay, the contracting negotiator, I think it was secret for a long time, but he negotiated. He got $800,000 a year just for being the figurehead of Marvel. Good. He got a pension for his wife of like maybe half that a year, and he also got 10% of profits from all their TV and movie projects.
So that was his.
Well, see, here's the thing. So
that's worth like a lot more than $800,000.
Right. So basically, what happened from this point? Again, this is 1996, and again, they're selling the filing cabinets. Their stuff's going out the door. And so basically what happened is they went, okay, there are people sniffing at the door. We'll sell off some of our properties to movie companies. That's how we'll get some money back, and we'll make money off merchandising. It's going to be great. So they started selling stuff off. They sold Blade, we mentioned before, to New Line Cinema. And Blade they made the movie with Wesley Snipes. That made $70 million profit, and Marvel got $25,000. Like, that's their...
Oh, and Kirby's like, sweet, $2,500 grand.
Oh, he was.
I mean, Lee, pardon me, Stan Lee is the 10%.
Quick note, Jack Kirby died in 1994. Supposedly,
so did he die when they were back
broken
on top?
Heart.
Looking
yeah,
good?
In a, well, no,
so he went out going,
just in the
good
cusp.
Night.
Yeah, I guess, I think he might have been just as they were hitting a nosedive, I think. Maybe, right. And he's like, good.
Yeah, I imagine he would have been happy.
Supposedly, Sock Stanley and Jack Kirby were at a comic convention in 1994 and they had a reconciliation. But
is this according to Stanley?
This is according to Stanley.
Right. It sounds like so fan fiction.
Yeah, so there's no other confirmation of that.
So their deal was very bad with the Blade movie then.
Yes, and so they kept doing this. So they sold, again, they sold X-Men to Fox. They sold Fantastic Four. They sold off Spider-Man to Sony. And essentially what happened is they were making some bad decisions. And then they also put in, there must have been some sort of perpetuity clause where if you keep making movies every couple of years, you get to retain ownership of these properties. So, which is why they made three Spider-Man movies, then there was a little break, then they made two more Spider-Man movies, and while they keep making X-Men movies, and they keep trying to make a Fantastic Four movie, even though they're terrible. And so they kept doing this, and eventually...
Give Fantastic Four back. You've had your chance.
Yeah, I know. My dream is that they sell the rights back to Marvel, and
every... Who can now afford it?
Yeah, exactly. And every year, Marvel makes one, and they let the other guys make one as well.
Right.
And so we get a really good one and we get a terrible one every year. That's kind of my dream. I would like to see that happen.
I just want every... I feel uncomfortable.
Yes.
That Marvel doesn't have all their own things. It makes me feel gross. You know, like...
Right.
It's like it's... I need it to be complete and all...
Yeah, I feel bad about it too.
It just makes me feel awkward. Mm.
And it also... In a way, at the time, they sold off their biggest... In a way, it's been kind of a positive. I mean,
okay.
Because they sold...
Sell that to us.
Well, they sold off their A-list stuff. They sold off the X-Men. They sold off Spider-Man. And they went off and they did some... You know, they did some okay business. You know, some of the Spider-Man movies are super fun and what have you. But then they've had to go, well, we have to do this. But basically, what happened is there's a guy called David Maisel who was a talent agent. And he basically... came up to them independently and he was like, why are you doing this? Like, why are you, I have some connections. I will, like, you should produce your own movies and get all the money.
Yeah.
And I'll help you make that happen kind of thing. And the pitch was they went to a company called Merrill Lynch, which is like a financial services company. And they basically said, we're going to give you 10 comic book properties, like some of our great characters, and give us $500 million. We will make that money back and we'll give you that money with interest. But if we don't, you can have these characters. Like, we will give up these characters forever kind of thing.
Well, that's their collateral.
Yeah, Captain America, they gave them the Avengers, Nick Fury, Black Panther, Ant-Man, Doctor Strange, Hawkeye, a couple of others that I guess were thrown in just to see if anyone was paying attention. Power Pack, Cloak and Dagger, and Shang-Chi, the Master of Kung Fu.
Okay,
nobody knows who they are.
Right.
I think that was just the test. Actually, paying attention.
There's three posters on my wall, and one of them is Shang-Chi, the
Master of Kung Fu.
And Power Pack.
Yeah.
Power Pack, and then also Yellow Boy.
Yeah. And eventually, and so they...
Kid.
Yeah. And so the for me, the good thing about this is they went, okay, well, what... We're going to put these characters up, and we're going to front them, and we're going to get this money, and we're going to make some movies. And they were like, okay, well, what characters do we have left? We don't have Spider-Man. We don't have X-Men.
Right.
What... Can we get some B-list characters and bring them to the front, maybe? And so they took... You know, Iron Man, who as a kid was my favorite character, but nobody ever... Like, when the Iron Man trailer came out, people were like, is this guy a robot? What's this guy's deal? Who even knows kind of thing?
Yeah, that's funny.
And that made $585 million. So that immediately made them all their money back, plus a little more. Yeah, they created Marvel Studios, which is their own producing company, and they kind of kicked everything off.
So Captain America was already big, but... Iron Man wasn't.
Correct.
Thor?
No.
Not big?
As a mythological character, sure. But
yeah, but
the
not
mighty
as a
Thor, no.
No, right. No. Yeah, see, I just assume they're always big. So,
right, okay, yeah.
So they're all... That makes sense. So they were just like, oh, we do what we can with these guys.
Yeah.
And then I know that Guardians of the Galaxy was like something that I'd never heard of, and I don't think the layman would have known them.
Yeah, I mean, that's a group of characters that have been around for a very long time, and it's sort of... B-list characters who exist off in space and...
Yeah, I read about them at the time. There's like a few different formations of them. There was one in the 60s or something.
Yeah, there was one in the 60s. There was a team set in the 30th century, and there's some modern era ones, and sometimes they meet and sometimes they cross over and et cetera. And yeah, it's kind of a mess, but they've really, you know, they've gotten people who love the form and love those characters and trying to make the best characters they can, and I think they've really nailed it.
So you reckon, maybe it's true that if they had all of their own characters initially,
Yeah, maybe, but they wouldn't have had to have worked for it.
Yeah, maybe it wouldn't have been as good.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. That's certainly a thing.
How about, what's the Hulk steal? I always find that confusing. There's many Hulk films, sometimes two in the same year. From different like Eric Banner is one, and then
Edward Norton is the other, the next year.
Like, and are there those Marvel made?
Well, the Edward Norton one is from the current universe,
yes,
I think.
Yes, it is. Yeah, that's I mean, what they've done now is Marvel, again, pioneering the shared universe in the comic books. They've then created a shared universe on screen, which is, again, a very canny move, because sometimes you can watch them independently, but if you want to get the full picture, you do have to watch every single one and then maybe buy them on DVD and watch them again before the next one comes out. Exactly. In the, what they did is they released Iron Man, and then they released The Incredible Hulk with Ed Norton, and at the end of that, there was a post-credit sequence where Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man shows up at the end and is like, hey, look at this, we're all in the same universe, how about that, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, that kind of kicked it off again. So originally the plan for The Incredible Hulk was to have Mark Ruffalo, but then the studio insisted on Edward Norton. And then Edward Norton was apparently such a pain to work with.
Right.
They got rid of him and he didn't want to come back anyway. And so they were like, well, Ruffalo's in. And now he's the Hulk.
So yeah, the Eric Banner one was unrelated.
Yeah, they redid the origin in The Incredible Hulk. So it's slightly different. You can include it if you want, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
I choose not to.
Okay, great.
Goodbye, Banner.
I haven't seen that one. I don't find the Incredible Hulk was definitely a big-ish character, right?
Yeah, oh, definitely. Yeah, he had his own series in a TV series in the '60s.
Yeah, with
Bill Bixby. Maybe not the '60s. The '80s.
What was his name? What's the main guy's name?
Bill Bixby and Lou Ferrigno.
Lou Ferrigno. Yeah. He's still famous as the Hulk, I think. I've heard of
him.
Yes, he is. Cameos in different things.
From time to time, he will be the voice of the Hulk in maybe an animated series. He's the voice, I think, in the Avengers, the first Avengers movie.
Isn't the voice just a lot of?
He speaks every once in a while.
Right. And when he does Hulk smash.
Yeah, and when he does, they're like, get Lou Ferrigno in.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mm. Okay, oh man, I want to know so many things.
Uh-huh.
Here we go. End of one of the movies, there's the duck.
Howard the Duck. Correct.
Is that going to be a movie?
Almost certainly no. They tried that in the 80s. There was a Howard the Duck movie.
I saw it in the 80s, I reckon.
Yeah. Quickly tell me, what's Howard the Duck?
Howard the Duck is he's a humanoid duck. He's from a parallel universe. He knows quack foo, which is a form of martial arts. He wears a little suit and tie.
Oh man!
He's kind of a very easily angered Donald Duck style character. He's had some very good comic book series, but he's sort of considered box office poison because Steven Spielberg or George Lucas made a movie.
I think it was George.
It must have been Lucas. Made a movie in the '80s, and it was just a weird looking duck character, and it was a very bizarre.
Looked like Plucker Duck sort of thing.
Like a real squat Plucker Duck, and it was very. It's a very odd movie. And
now I reckon you know how these things come in peaks and troughs. Mortgage the house, put it all on quack foo. That is my advice. Right? That's what I'm taking away from this episode.
I saw
that. I reckon as a kid, I would have had absolutely zero idea. But it was from I would have had zero idea what Marvel was.
Right,
And only until really just then did I put that all together. That was already part, that duck, it wasn't some weird joke. That duck was from Marvel.
Yes.
Or it was a weird joke, and but it is from Marvel. Ugh.
Yeah, he's been...
What else do I want to know, Dave? I want to know what's everything.
I want to know, does Stan Lee still get 10% of all the movies?
No, here's the thing. In, I want to say 2002, Stan Lee realized that he wasn't being paid that 10% from his movie earnings. And he went to... He actually sued Marvel. And so... And people refer to it... It's like Colonel Sanders suing KFC.
Yeah.
In a way. Because he's the figurehead and he's suing his own company. But the head of Marvel is a guy called Ike Perlmutter. And he is notoriously cranky, which is very diplomatic to say. And he doesn't like Stan Lee, apparently. And so he's like, I don't understand why he gets paid every year for doing nothing. I don't like him. I want him out of here, kind of thing. And so he wasn't paying that 10%. And so Stan Lee sued Marvel. They settled out of court. Again, nobody knows the actual figure, but people the assumption is that he got paid $10 million. And they said, but you're out. Like, you can't, we're going to stop paying you. And
you don't get the wage
You don't get the wage, you don't get anything else, $10 million and you're out. Which, in a way, is still a lot of money.
In a way,
especially when at that time, when he's in his early 80s, and he's like, well, I probably won't be around that much longer.
Right, yeah.
Is there any chance they're going to bring everything back together? Bring all the, because there's Sony.
Yep. Fox
and another one.
Yeah, New Line. There's been a couple of others. We have gotten a few characters back. So Daredevil was originally, I think Daredevil was given to Sony as well, and Elektra, which is the spin-off from Daredevil, and they produced some terrible movies, quite terrible movies, and they have been purchased back.
Okay.
So Daredevil got his own series on Netflix. The Punisher was purchased. He's come back as well. Spider-Man has come back for Civil War. So that's a very significant negotiation. Some people were like, well, who cares if Spider-Man's in this? And it's because he's a quintessential part of that universe, and he hasn't been able to be in what people consider the best version of it, this Marvel Cinematic Universe, and now he's back. So people are excited.
So Sony, like, just give us a bit of money.
Yeah, we don't know the details, and we don't know.
Is it a loner or?
Yeah, they're going to do a Spider-Man solo movie. It's coming up soon. It's called Spider-Man Homecoming, and Sony are making it. But they are scripting it and producing it with Marvel's approval. So,
right, so it's in the universe, but Sony makes the money.
Sony's still making it, yeah. Uh-huh.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, that's complicated, but it's
Isn't it, though?
Good compromise. Yeah.
I mean, and again, at this point, you know, the final business stroke here, I guess, is that Marvel were purchased by Disney in 2009 for $4 billion.
Right.
So they have Disney behind them. So if ultimately at this point, I think if Disney wants a character back, they will just give whoever owns it $1 billion and say, we'd like it back, please.
Right.
So if they think it's worth it. So at this point, I don't know, like some characters are kind of poisonous. Yep. Like the Fantastic Four, do they even want it back? They might need 10 years before the memory of that those characters are gone and they can give it another try.
Yeah, just so. It seems like a corny thing.
Mm, yeah.
But what about the X-Men? Because that's a pretty successful cinematic universe as well.
That's true.
And quite well received too.
Would you call it a universe? I mean, it's just one.
I would call it a universe. I mean, there's a lot of spin-offs. And it's a very strange continuity in that they keep resetting time, and they keep, you know, there'll be a character who's a teenager in the 90s, but then he's also a teenager in the 60s. And there's it's very odd. At this point, the X-Men universe is kind of just watch the movie and have fun with it.
Okay.
We don't really care what the continuity is. But yeah, I think that one's going to be... That one seems quite tricky. There's characters in the Marvel universe called the Inhumans, and they're kind of... I think Marvel are building them up to be the equivalent of the X-Men in the cinematic universe. So if they can't get the X-Men, they're like, well, here's a backup. We'll use these guys as a backup. But...
Because there's something about not being able to use mutants, right?
Correct, yes.
They are, like, whichever company that is, they bought mutants.
They bought, yes, exactly, they did, yeah.
So there's no way you could have Wolverine, but he's not a mutant or something?
No, I don't...
Otherwise, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't... So that's a fun fact for you, that... So Wolverine was created by a guy called Len Wein as a villain for the Hulk. There was this period of time where the Hulk, they're just like, okay, we need somebody to fight the Hulk, you know, this month and the next month and the month after that. And they just were like, okay, create a throwaway character. And this guy, Len Wein, created Wolverine. And then many years later I think it was one of the Wolverine, you know, premieres, Len Wein was invited to, you know, that premiere. And Hugh Jackman said, this guy, it's Len Wein, he created Wolverine. I owe my whole career to this guy. He's amazing. Take a bow. Everybody, you know, everybody was like, woo, you know, this guy's the best. And later Len Wein was like, I would have preferred a check, if I'm honest with you.
come on,
guys, you know. But I don't know. It's all a mystery.
All right. I probably should stop asking questions eventually. But what about this?
Yes.
It sounds like you're about to pitch a comic idea.
What about this? All right. So it's a part human, part animal.
No
part,
mutants.
Part inhuman.
Oh, good, good very word. Good.
Part
good
part ghost. Part funk man.
Part
yes.
Part android.
Part shadow. Part android.
He's part shadow.
yeah. You know how, like, all the most famous characters all seem to have a huge history, right? They all go back to the 30s or the 40s or the 50s or something.
Yeah.
Are there any iconic characters that have been invented in, say, our lifetimes, so since the 80s or 90s?
Yeah, or is there no chance for new characters?
Well, it's interesting, you're right, because there was this huge burst of creativity.
Yeah.
And but they were just rehashing the old characters.
Yeah, that's a good question. A lot of the X-Men are modern, created in the 80s. I guess there's a lot of more independent characters that, like, from, like, more indie creators that are probably... Give me a second. I'm sure I can think of somebody.
Because it's kind of... I think it's just, like, everything is, like, all movies in general.
Uh-huh.
It's just, like, old ideas being redone.
Correct, yeah.
TV shows and everything. So yeah. I just... Yeah, it feels like a new superhero character would almost be like, oh, that's just made up.
Right, yeah,
give us
exactly.
a real one.
Yeah, you give us a real one, like the ones that we had when we were kids. Yeah,
yeah. yeah. So, but it'd be cool if they could figure out how to do that.
Guys, I can't help you. I think it's...
Well, maybe one of our fans, Cecil, is a regular tweeter to us. And
I hope there's
he
hundreds
seems to
of people
about
just yelling at modern era superheroes at us. I mean, there's a
that
lot
that
of...
I've heard of. That's the
yeah,
catch.
Yeah, no, see, that's the thing.
Yeah, like, exactly. You can't just be like, oh, how about that? No.
Yeah, I mean, again, a lot... Marvel and DC are actually very good at introducing sort of more minor characters and superhero teams that do have a lot of appeal if you're already, you know... part of that, you know, you're a big fan of that universe already, and maybe it will take, you know, them being pushed into a Marvel movie and you know, that will be, then they'll become an A-list hero, but until
right.
then, you know, they're just kind of middling, you know, they're good characters, but they're not blockbusters.
B players.
Hmm.
The B, what about that? Is there such a character?
I think it's a Seinfeld movie.
Oh,
yeah,
Seinfeld.
That's right, yeah.
The
yeah.
B movie.
B movie, yeah.
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 Damn, everything's been done.
Everything's been done. Cool, well...
Speaking of everything being done...
Well, this episode seems like it's pretty done. Thank you so much.
We'll turn off the mics anyway. I'm going to keep asking
questions.
Yeah,
Matt, cool. We'll be asking questions all night long.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
And it's only 4 p.m., so...
yeah.
It's a long night. Mm. Thank you so much, Nick Mason.
It's been a pleasure.
For schooling... I don't know... I'm not that up to date.
Yeah. I want to be.
I don't know if... I still don't know if you're up to date.
Can I
now.
Ask you...
I don't know.
Bits and pieces.
You obviously see the movies is the final question from me. Do
yeah.
you read comics?
Not as much as I used to. Most of this knowledge has come from being a big fan of them in the 90s. Like, it's that knowledge that won't leave my brain. Like...
And in the 90s, would you go out and buy them from...
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Comic book
yeah.
shop?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And did you keep any of those for when the trough becomes so
no, I,
deep?
I, there's...
Or so shallow?
I actually do have a Spider-Man number one. I do have the Todd McFarlane Spider-Man number one. It's just the regular cover. It's not a fancy cover. It's bagged and boarded, so...
What year is that from?
90... I want to say 93.
93, but
wow.
This is one of the 1 million that were made at the
yeah,
time.
Yeah, so I'm going to wait 200 years and...
Wow, and after
assuming all the other people have died.
And once the nuclear fallout has calmed down, the half-life of that.
I am going to cash right in. But yeah, not so much anymore. I do like to get digital comics. You can just put them right on your iPad. That's good.
Just to read.
Yes.
Not to take up space.
Yeah, exactly.
Apart
right.
from digital space. All right, I've got a couple more questions.
I'm ready.
Sorry about that. This feels like good wrapping up ones, though.
Uh-huh.
All right, so I reckon a lot of people listening probably don't know much about it.
Uh-huh.
Like, kind of like me and Dave, who kind of do but really don't. I think that's
no,
what the,
yeah,
the average that, person now, I reckon, knows a little bit because the movies are so big.
Mm.
What is so your favorite character as a kid was Iron Man?
Yeah.
All right, here's a couple of parts, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Who's your favorite character now?
Yep.
All time?
Uh-huh.
What's your favorite movie
uh-huh.
all time? And what would be your suggested movie to someone who hasn't seen anything? What would be what's the best
entry level?
Yeah.
Good questions. Do you mean my favorite... When you say favorite character, do you mean just Marvel or anything?
Marvel and everything.
Oh, okay. It might still be Iron Man because he's a real arrogant jerk, but he's gotten there on the grit. He's gotten there on the grit of just... He's got his grit and his tenacity and his genius and his parents' billions of dollars.
Yeah.
So that's pretty good for him. My favorite character of all time is a DC character called Starman, who is a character from the 50s, but then his son took over the role. He was kind of a character. He wouldn't wear a costume, and he thought the whole thing was kind of dumb.
Yeah.
And he would rather negotiate his way out of a fight than actually fight. And he was it wasn't quite an ironic take, but it was kind of like a fan of comic books becoming a superhero kind of thing. And it was I'm a big fan of it. And it had like it was 80 issues long, and it had like a very defined beginning, middle, and end. So it was like this saga. And you read the whole thing and it was finished and it was real good.
I recommend you
track that down.
I like the idea of something having a start and a finish.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
It's so rare in the comic book world. My favorite, I think Civil War is actually very, very good. I'm a big fan of that one. If you want to see just one, Captain America, The Winter Soldier, which is the second Captain America movie. That's him in the modern era. And it's a great, a lot of the Marvel movies are, they're a genre film wrapped up like a superhero film. Because just a superhero film can be kind of boring. Like, oh, they have an origin, and they fight a villain, and that's the end. So, you know, they can be kung fu movies, or they can be, you know, magic movies, or what have you, and they've just got this superhero trapping. But Captain America: The Winter Soldier is this espionage movie that is wrapped up like a superhero movie. And it's very, very good. Action's great. It does have this super espionage style sheen to it. It feels like there was a movie in the 70s called 3 Days of the Condor, which had Robert Redford in it. This is this spy movie. And it has the feel very much like that. And also Robert Redford is in The Winter Soldier. So it's a really good film.
So that's your best tip for new players.
If you're a newbie, yeah, check that one out.
Awesome. Mm. Thank you so much for coming in and being Jess Perkins.
It's been a pleasure.
Big shoes to fill.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah, as you know.
Yeah.
The deepest trough of all, am I right?
Oh, you very yellow jumper to fill. So yellow.
Yellow kid.
Oh, we definitely did. Thank you very much. If we would like to hear more of your weekly musings on superheroes and the
You can listen to the Weekly Planet. Myself and my friend James do this podcast every week, and we talk about the nerd news of the week, and then we'll pick some sort of topic, or we'll watch a movie and we'll review it, or we'll have a good old time. We might do a superhero showdown where people email in superheroes they want to fight, and we all determine definitively who the winner is.
Oh.
I mean, not definitively, but we're not really that invested in it, if I'm honest with you.
Who would win between Matt and I?
Oh, it's a good question.
That is a good question. It would be a long and boring battle.
But I think, I think Matt is bigger, but I think just the fact that you asked the question would suggest that you have... You have the tendency to violence, you have the grit and determination. Yeah. I think you might win. Yeah,
I mean, that's probably true.
Absolutely.
Imagine getting beaten in a fight by a man who weighs as much as... Who? Paris Hilton?
I weigh the same weight as Paris Hilton, that's right.
Imagine.
Well.
Imagine.
I can imagine it.
Well, if you donate to this show, imagine no more. That's right, we will start a Kickstarter for Matt and I to fight to the death. Thanks so much for listening, everyone. You can suggest a topic. Thank you very much to Pete.
Yes.
For suggesting this topic. Do go on pod@gmail.com if you're on the email. If you are on Facebook, we're at .com/dogoonpod. And you can tweet us at dogoonpod. The hat is brimming with ideas. Love it.
Yes. What's your Twitter again? You got great Twitter.
Oh, I'm at Wikipedia Brown, which is a sweet reference from the 80s that nobody gets anymore.
Ah.
Like Encyclopedia Brown.
Dave's got it. First one. Yes. Well done, Dave.
Thank you. I'll win this fight after all. Get in contact. Thanks so much for listening to the show, and we'll be back with the lovely trough-filled shoes that is Jess. We'll be back with Jeff or Jess Perkins. We'll find someone if she doesn't make it back, because she's such a comedy superstar these days. Thank you very much, and good night.
Later. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.